Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the amazing Fountain City Radio in Columbus, Georgia, in the Valley and surrounding areas. News, thought, talk, speculation, and features with local talented artists and entertainers. Listen in or speak out. The choice is always yours, but tune in and get turned on, because good stuff is always coming at you on Fountain City Radio. Sponsored by Kingstown Family Foundation, Fountain City Radio is designed with you and yours in mind.
Good evening, Columbus, Georgia. I am back in the saddle again. You guys probably remember me from the Legacy of a Nation radio show. Went off the air a couple of years ago. You know, little issues here and there, but I'm back in the saddle again, beefing it back up here in Columbus, Georgia. And we have online, first of all, let me say I'm glad you're listening in. And we have online right now, live, Mayor-elect Skip Henderson, in the city of Columbus, who is going to be replacing Mayor Teresa Tomlinson come January 2019. We brought him on the show today just to give us a good inaugural kickoff, and also to any callers who want to call in, ask questions, make any comments. But Mayor-elect Skip Henderson, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am, I can. Thank you for having me.
We are online. We got a little short time. The show is very short today. Our time is limited. So let's get right into the show.
Sure.
I wanted to ask you about are you still with me?
Yes, ma'am, I'm here.
Okay. I want to make sure. I wanted to ask you about the state of the city address and the state of things the way they are in Columbus right now. And where's leasing, and what are some of the first things you plan to implement in the first 90 days in office?
Well, I think, you know, from my perspective, the state of the city, I think is overall very, very good. I mean, I think we live in a wonderful community with some serious issues. And the challenge is for like-minded people to gather together to try to address these issues for the benefit of all the citizens of Columbus. We're really excited. We'll take office, I think, on January 7th. And I think the first council meeting will be on the 8th. And I'm really focused for the next couple of months on trying to meet with members of council, some of the partners. I will probably be talking with you again, because I want to meet with the pastors and talk about some things we can do to address some of the crime issues.
Okay. All right. Now, according to the state of the city, it's stated that the crime rate has been decreased by about 39% since Mayor Tomlinson has been in office.
Mm-hmm.
Can you substantiate that and let us know how much further you want to drive it down? I would hope to zero, but since we know that's
absolutely
not possible.
Right.
You know, that's not possible. Well, how much further down do you plan to drive?
You know, I think probably the number one, in terms of priority, for any city, is to try to make sure that the citizens feel safe. Mayor Tomlinson has released those figures, and I'd love to be able to verify them or make sure they're correct, but I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that. I'm not sure where she got them from. I'm assuming she got them just from historical statistics. But I think what that tells us is that while the overall crime issue is down in Columbus, Georgia, there's some of the violent crimes are still very much in the news, and they're still happening way too often in some of the neighborhoods. And you're exactly right. Our goal is going to be perfection. Our goal is to have zero crime. Now, as you pointed out, that's not really realistic. But I think the issue is to focus on getting it as absolutely low as we can. And in today's world, it's really a societal issue. And I think the only way we're ever truly going to impact in any significant way crime in any community is to engage the community.
Right. Okay. Now, I know that they have a national night out. I know you're familiar with it. And,
yes, ma'am.
I'm actually also, by way of disclosure, president of the East Highland neighborhood watch list. And we have a lot of concerns with some gang and crime activities going on in these islands. So can you focus on that just a minute and let me know what you have heard about it by the by, and what are some of your intentions toward heading for East Island to take down some of the gang activity in this area?
Sure. Well, I'm a big believer in that what you focus on expands. So if we focus mm-hmm. on trying to make a difference in the neighborhoods, then we will be able to do it. Naturally we need a full complement of public safety officials. We need our police and our sheriff and our marshal to be operating at full capacity. And right now they're not. Last number I heard was about 84 officers down in the police department. And so we've got some challenges in trying to get them back up to full strength. Now, I'll tell you that I'm committed to doing that, to trying to make sure that we've got the full police force out there so that they can patrol. And they can also help to, perhaps through some community policing efforts, and I know that's a buzzword a lot of people use, but in my mind, it means they get to know the neighborhoods, they get to create relationships with the residents so that there's a mutual trust between the officer and the neighborhood so that they feel comfortable passing on information that may help us actually prevent some crimes. I think we do need to focus on the fact that our young people, if they're not given a stable environment at home, they're going to find stability in gangs, and they're going to find more destructive opportunities. Now, we have to be careful not to use a broad brush in why these young people don't have that support structure at home, because we tend to blame it on the single parent, saying that they may be caught in a cycle of addiction or they don't care about their children. That's not the case. Some of these parents are working three and four jobs. So the result is the same. If you're not there being able to provide the necessary support and frankly the boundaries, then we're going to have to address it as a society by trying to get them involved with other organizations, by utilizing our faith-based community, our charitable and civic organizations and mentor groups.
Okay. Now, do you believe yourself that our annual National Night Out are helping the situation with bringing the police communities together with the citizens?
Absolutely. I think any engagement that we can create between the citizens and the police and law enforcement officers is a good thing. And I've attended nearly every one of the National Night Outs in the past. Already made a commitment to be at the Boys Club in August when we hold the next one. And I'll tell you, I think the National Night Out also helped us to identify some areas. Now, this has been years ago when Carmen Cabeza was the city manager. And we actually went into the neighborhoods. We took the police and the fire departments, the marshal and the sheriff's departments, and we would march with the drug marchers through the streets. We would bring our code enforcement. We would tear down homes that were uninhabitable. We'd force people who were letting their shrubs grow up and overgrown, and we'd get them to fix it up. And then when we'd leave, we would ask and pretty much expect the neighborhood to do much what y'all have done in East Highland. And that's create a neighborhood watch and to be actively engaged in trying to take care of their own neighborhoods and quickly reporting anything out of the ordinary to us. So I don't see why we can't revisit that program and try to get into the individual neighborhoods and try to run some of these folks out that are there to do no good.
Oh, that would be absolutely wonderful. And I won't go into any details on that, but that's the kind of thing we've been looking for to happen.
Well, I think that it has to be a collaborative effort between the community itself and the law enforcement community. I had an opportunity to visit the other morning with the organization SALT, Seniors and Law Enforcement Together. And, of course, the seniors, in addition to being kind of preyed upon by a lot of these folks, they also are in a unique position to be able to let us know if they see anything out of the ordinary in their neighborhoods. So by leveraging that, working together, you know, the police department and the sheriffs and the marshals departments are able to perhaps head off some trouble before it starts.
Okay. Now, what amount of your time initially do you think is going to be spent on drawing some kind of balance between, you said, 84 officers down and the current crime rate in the city? And when you say 84 officers down, are you meaning they're quitting, leaving, getting fired, possibly being murdered, or what exactly? Why are we down 84 officers?
Well, all I can offer you is speculation. I actually have some appointments that we're setting up to go meet with some of the patrol officers, because I want to talk with the men and women that are actually riding the patrols. I intend to go, if they'll have me, let me ride along in a couple of different areas. But, you know, I think one of the challenges is that in an effort to keep a good wage to attract them to join the police department, we've addressed the entry-level pay, but we haven't done much, if anything, with the pay of the officers that have been there 3 to 7 years. So what happens is, after a couple of years, if I've been there 8 or 10 years and you've just started, you're making what I'm making. And I think that what's happening is, I think that has an impact on morale. And I think there may be some other things as well. But, it's just they're finding safer places to work for as much money or more money than they're making right now. So we've got to address the pay scale.
Oh, okay. Now, according to this report, which let me tell you what it says on here. It says that an increase in police officer salary is 22%. Now, the numbers in 2012 were showing at 34,818 and 24 at 36,557. And I looked up the current numbers, not from 2012, but currently. And Columbus's pay scale, apparently, for its officers is, it looks to be about between $5,000 and $8,000 a year higher than Atlanta. And I know Atlanta has excessive crime throughout.
Right.
So when we're at 48 on a pay scale, what are you looking to do to increase that?
Well, and I think
that's just a median.
Mm-hmm. And I think that you bring up a very good point, and that is that we're doing pretty well with our entry level pay, but there's a total package that we have to look at. One is the cost of health insurance has gone up so high that there's some police officers taking home less now than they were 5 or 6 years ago. So as we're passing on more of the expense of their health care, it's eating into their take-home pay. And I think that there may be, when Atlanta starts them off, I think they have a pay scale, so they pretty well know where they're going to move in the next year and the year after that. And we actually do have that pay plan. It was the University of Georgia's pay plan. The problem is, with our present resources, we just haven't been able to fund it the way we should.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What are we missing in our present resources? Is there the use of another tax that's needed? And you know, I know people hate the two words. I understand that, but that's how we pay for this stuff. Is there some kind of way to rectify where the budget is right now to make that happen?
Well, I certainly think so. I also think that it can't be. I'm not a proponent of just going and increasing what it costs for people to live in this community, because the culture of government should be such that our only mission is to try to create an environment where people can thrive, period, mm-hmm. and do it so that it doesn't cost an arm and a leg for them to live here. I certainly don't think the answer is just increasing revenue. I think it's got to be a balance. I think it's got to be looking at new and innovative ways to operate some of the services and provide some of the services in a different manner than we have in the past. But mm-hmm. that's not easy, because when you change when you change how services are delivered, it creates a little disruption, both on the part of the employees and the citizens. And I tell you, we talk a lot about public safety, but man, we've got some terrific general government employees who have not had an adjustment to their pay either.
I got you. Okay. Now, when you talk about cost-cutting, and that's something else people like to dip it back and forth about, but when you
they
talk
do.
About cost-cutting, would you say at the moment that Columbus is really down to the bare bones on cutting costs?
Well, in the last budget, and if I'm correct, I did get a copy of the budget. I had to resign from council back in February. In order to run for mayor, and that kind of excluded me from the budget process. But
right.
historically we have had about 60%, maybe just a little less, of our budget goes to personnel services. That's in paying for people. That's salaries and benefits and pension. And so that means only about 40% is actually going into operating services. And that doesn't typically leave a lot of room to cut unless you cut people. Now, having said that, I think that what we can do is just try to take a look at the way we deliver these services. I'm not a big fan of privatization because I think sometimes if you're not careful, you can lose control of the services delivered. But certainly that's going to be an option. But in many, many instances, the services we're providing, the city's providing, they're doing it already at a rate lower than what a private industry would have come in and done it.
Well, I see. Okay. All right. Now, I'm going to switch gears on you for just a second here and ask
okay.
you a question about the tax freeze here. We know
right.
Mayor Tomlinson went for all the freeze, and there was a huge opposition to it. And as a homeowner myself, I've noticed that I don't know the best way to put this and be politically correct, but I feel like with the neighborhood that I live in being, you know, kind of standard, kind of sort of substandard area, I feel like I'm paying for at least 5 homeowners around here who aren't paying taxes nearly at all, if at all.
Right.
It seems like I'm covering the cost for 5 of the houses on this block is what I pay every year in property taxes. What's going to be your stance on the tax freeze?
Well, what you're describing is something that a lot of people feel, but there's very passionate and solid arguments on both sides. The tax freeze is really generational. At some point, as the title passes on to a new owner, either through probating a will or through just selling it outright, it resets at the current value. Now, I'll tell you, I have been on council for about 21 years. And I've seen the freeze upheld, I think, twice at the ballot and once in the courts. I have no intention of bringing that back up. I think the people have been very clear. I did vote to put it on the ballot this last time for a couple of reasons, not least of which is that it was an entirely different question. To me, it made great sense that the people that had it would keep it, but there'd be no new freezes issued or placed on property taxes. And it seemed to me like that was a reasonable way to get us in a position to allow property taxes to pay for more of the services. But the voters rejected it. I certainly respect that, and I don't see any reason to bring it back up.
Okay. All right. Well, there are some people out here who will be heck of glad to hear that.
and there'll be some people who are upset. But
about it, exactly.
That's right. But you know, I get it. Anytime you talk taxes, it's a very, very emotional topic. I mean, we just went through a very trying time and trying to transition over to a new system for the tax assessor's office.
Oh, I know.
And,
I'm on the board of
it. Oh, yeah. Well, then you know very, very well that we had, but you know, we did expect an increase simply because we were doing a full countywide reassessment. And the system, and people kind of got upset with me when I said this, but the system did work. It's just that the information that was entered into the system was erroneous. So it doesn't matter how solid the system is you put, if you put in the wrong information, you're going to get the wrong total out. And I have confidence from what I've been told that they have corrected that, and we should be moving on a little smoother.
Well, I said on the board B was on in the month of June, I believe it was, and not June, I'm sorry, May. And I actually watched the homeowner come in and have a complete case of sticker shock when his property taxes went up 3 times what he had been paying, and it was found out that it was not erroneous. It's just that he hadn't been evaluated since the 60s, I believe.
Well, that's the other part. And you know, the other problem, when people were saying they went up 1,000% or 500%, almost every one of those that went up that percentage, their tax rate went from like, I think, $10 to $50. Well, that's 500% right there. But it's still a very, very low amount. But once they got the correct information in, and it was kind of focused on people who had more than 2 acres, the H2 accounts. And also on some commercial lots, if they were still zoned commercial, they automatically defaulted. You probably know more about it than I do, but they defaulted to the highest level, and it got some folks, you know, rightfully so. It got them a little upset.
Yeah. Well, were you aware that we actually have some properties in Columbus that are actually not listed on the property tax? Some addresses that are not even on file as even existing, but we're sitting there looking at a house sitting on land.
Really? No, I didn't know that. The only property that I was under the impression that were not taxed at all were either properties owned by charitable organizations or educational holdings, like CSU has some properties that are not taxed, but I didn't know that we had residential or commercial properties that weren't being taxed.
Yeah, there's a particular residential property, I believe it's really at the box. So the truth is, you can't get much out of it, but there's people living in the home, and this. And to tell you the truth about it, if a senior couple, they probably wouldn't be paying much of anything by now anyway. But we're trying to figure out in our heads how that whole piece of lot and that house on it got carved out of this. We're trying to figure out how it ended up. Like,
can't answer that. I don't know. I know you can survey out different parts of a property and then divide it up by issuing deeds, but they should all still be taxed according to the value of the piece of property they own.
Okay. All righty. Well, we're coming down on.
But I may call you, and we'll have to look into that.
Oh well, you know, I'm saying it's elderly people. They probably don't have much money at all. If any.
No. Well,
but
and there are some exemptions.
How that happened? Yeah.
I don't know. There are some exemptions, some additional homestead exemptions for seniors and people on fixed incomes. We've always tried to be very, very conscious of the fact that there are some folks that just can't afford to pay much more than they are. So,
well, we weren't so much worried about that because the property probably not worth nothing, but we were trying to figure out how it ended up with not even an address, not even, it's like it's not there. But it's there. We're looking at it. Like, how did that happen? It's like the house is there.
I don't know, but that's a good question for the tax assessor's office.
Yeah, well, don't let it be said that I was the one that called them.
No, ma'am.
we I'm looking at also some of our issues with homelessness in Columbus.
Yes.
And since we're coming down on our last 5 minutes, what are you? What are some of your thoughts about how you'll address homelessness in the city in 2019?
You know, I think we do such a much better job than we used to. We've gotten organizations that are helping us quantify how many people are on the streets, keeping up with those folks on there. There are missions that are taking place. I know Rose Hill has a ministry. It's got a safe house that, you know, kind of takes some of those that can't easily access some of the other facilities. I believe that Muhammad Ali's statement about service to others is the rent we pay for our space here on earth. And I also believe the Bible when Jesus says, "So as you do unto the least of these, so you do unto me." So I think that the answer to the homeless issue is not so much a governmental issue as much as it is the government providing an environment that encourages members of the community to get involved and try to find ways to help them transition. Now, I've seen some innovative programs. I don't know that we have the resources to do it here, but I saw where, I think it was in Austin, where they're actually paying people who are living on the streets to help keep their city clean. And they've even had some success in finding transitional housing because as they're being paid, they're able to use some of that income to help them get, because some folks are, a lot of people are one paycheck away from living in their car. And there are some constituencies within the homeless population that actually choose to live on the street. But that's a very, very small number of people. So I think we just need to work as a community to try to continue to support the agencies that exist and try to help these folks transition into better paying jobs and into shelter.
Do you know of any city grant funds that are available for a shelter type of situation?
There, I don't right now. Now there are agencies that we access that stay on top of that. So I'm hopeful that they're exercising all the opportunities they can identify, particularly with grants. And trying to come up with ways to try to help us. My wife and I actually volunteered. I volunteer periodically through our church with the Rose Hill Ministry and feeding the individuals that come in. And my wife and I were members of the Valley Interfaith Promise that where churches would house families to try to keep families together when they were in a temporary situation so they could transition back to housing. But yeah, you know, it's going to take a community effort to try to address this problem.
Okay, all right. Well, I tell you, we're coming down on about 1 minute and 40 seconds, so we're going to be automatically long off here because that's all the time up. Well, 90 seconds. We're going to be long off. But yeah, that's all the time I can manage this month. But I want to thank you again, Mayor-elect Skip Henderson. Looking forward to seeing you sworn in January 2019. And we
Thank
hope
you.
We can get stuff coming out of you in 2019 and looking forward. And God bless you. And
I hope so. God bless you and what you're doing to try to keep the public notified.
Trying to. We're glad you're headed to the mayor. Thank you so much for calling in. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, ma'am.
Bye bye.
You're listening to the Amazing Fountain City Radio in Columbus, Georgia, in the Valley and surrounding areas. News, thoughts, talk, speculation, and features with local talented artists and entertainers. Listen in or speak out. The choice is always yours, but tune in and get turned on because good stuff is always coming at you on Fountain City Radio. Sponsored by Kingstown Family Foundation, Fountain City Radio is designed with you and yours in mind.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you next Monday on Fountain City Radio. This is your host, Pastor Renee talking, and I'll see you guys again soon. We have a wonderful guest together for next week. Bye-bye.